This is Joe Meyer. We're broadcasting live from Freedom Rectangle. Main Street runs right through it. Joining me at the KBOO booth is Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What brings you down here?
I walk through frequently to check in with my federal parole officer, and I came down here the first night, the Occupy Portland, I don't know, it was 6th or the 8th.
The Thursday after the march?
Yeah, Thursday. And I came and I had my sign, Gross National Happiness, and I said my piece and I exercised my rights. And I walked through it, but I mean, there's so many people and then just presence police and things. And so I can't be down here all the time. And I just spent a few hours down here today, and I met quite a few interesting people, political science student from PSU, and I'd like to see more of those people down here talking about good issues. I mean, he claimed to be a nonpartisan advocate of the people, and we talked about Libertarian Party, because as far as entrenched parties that have standing in America, I like some of their platform, but... and I also saw a fellow getting a bust, and this guy is doing a clay bust of him, and I knew the person that was getting the bust done. I saw him on the bus one time, and I gave him some hush puppies, you know, and he was getting interviewed and having this bust done. I didn't want to interrupt, and we started talking, and then that's when that political science came up, and he brought up an important issue of, you know, why are they trying to hide homelessness here in the city? I didn't know, because I go by TPI on the max, and I see it. I know it's there, and I'm aware because of my situation coming out of prison that there are those services and things like that. And he said, well, they're trying to build, like, a bigger building with, like, two-way mirrors so people can't see in, but they can see out and get their services like that, what the food, the Blanchard House. I don't know if it was TPI or Blanchard House where they're trying to do this, supposedly. And I was like, yeah, that's like putting your old senile aunt in and shutting her away in the closet, you know? And we were talking about that with the political science student. And there was points where the political science students, we talked about certain issues that we had in common, like hunger strikes. And there's one guy down here on a hunger strikes. I haven't seen him, but it says he's on his 9th day or something. And I resonated with that because I've gone that far on for certain issues. And this is an important issue, and there should be more people. I mean, I don't know how far people are willing to go on things like that. But
you've already tried your hunger strike. How far did you get on that?
14 days. This is my third one, and this is the first time with no water. The first time I did with water was 9 days in prison. Second time, 7 days with water in prison. And then the third, I went 14 days with no food and 9 days, almost 10 days with no water. And that's a whole different animal.
Did that bring about change? I mean, how did you know it was time to eat again?
Well, in that circumstance, I got what I wanted after that one. But the other two, I didn't. And the first reason I would have gone longer on the first one, my mom asked me to eat. And I've never done it before, you know. And I just wanted to get to another institution. I was protesting my housing. And the second thing was hygiene. And I got it through other avenues, not through my hunger strike. And that's where I'm at on the hunger strike. I mean, yeah, if it's an important issue, yeah, I don't know how long he's willing to take it. But, yeah, just the fact that there's one hunger striker, that legitimizes this whole thing for me being down here. Because the issue I said with the political science student was with the hunger strikes, and we kind of did an analogy between, like, yeah, I only came down here the first day and did my thing, said my piece, and I walked through it on the way to the federal courthouse pretty frequently in the last week or two, you know?
Just on your way by, really.
Yeah, just walking by because, you know, the situation here, so, you know. And he said, yeah, what should be like that? There should be as many people on the first day with as many signs and occupying the city, not just this park, you know? And I said, yes, there's no half measures. This is an important movement. And yeah, I totally agree. And I did an analogy where on that first hunger strike, we were protesting hygiene issues, you know, the real issue was mostly a cup in the cell, but wrapping toilet paper. They were giving us wraps like 20 times around their hand instead of a full roll of toilet paper at Two Rivers and Correctional Institution. This is like May 1st, 2005. And we got the toilet paper after, I mean, this is mass cell extractions. Officers were being called in from other institutions like EOCI, and 24-hour straight cell extractions. They were shipping inmates to every DSU in the state. And trying to break you guys up.
What was the purpose of that?
Yeah, they were trying to break us up and the whole movement. And we were trying to write letters to, you know, the newspapers and things like that. And they were intercepting that. And so they wanted, but that's neither here nor there. That we resorted to violence, and they had to pull us out of our cells, and we were fighting with the officers.
Physical violence, because, you mean? You guys resorted to physical violence.
Yeah, because they weren't willing to do hunger strike. I knew they weren't. And they tried to sign me up that not even a day after I had one meal, and I went 9 meals or 9 days. So it was like 20-something meals. I don't even know. And they said, well, we're going to go on a hunger strike too, quite a few. And I said, well, look, you got to go. You're not going to even get their attention unless you go 3 days. That's 9 meals, all right? And if you guys are going to ask me to sign up after I just ate one meal after going 9 days, you guys better go at least those 9 meals, right? And most of the people dropped out, you know. And the few that went like a day and a half the most, like 2 or 3, you know. And I was just, I was like, I know you guys aren't, you know. And, it was just a joke. But, you know.
What kind of positive change did you see coming out of this kind of gathering? What's the good news?
Man, with more people, I can see positive change happening. You were saying, the lady that was sitting in your spot a minute ago said these tents are going to come down, but that doesn't have to happen. It may happen, but we need to be occupying Portland. We need to be occupying America and everywhere in America and everywhere in the world, because they're doing this in the world. They're lighting themselves on fire in Morocco, in Tibet, and they've done that before in Prague, in Vietnam, and in other Muslim countries. There are people pouring gasoline on themselves and lighting themselves on fire in political protest. And I've seen YouTube videos of government agencies breaking that down and talking about it as a political tool. And that's something I'm not advocating, but it's something that brings governments to life, because they can't condemn it like terrorist violent actions. You know, that's against yourself, and it's protesting the situation. And especially here in America, if that were to happen, I mean, there wouldn't need to be Occupy these cities, you know what I'm saying? Because we're the richest country in the world, and we're supposed to have the American dream and all these things. And if someone were to light themselves on fire, I don't know how to say that. I mean, I would like to see someone do it just fake, you know, and go in a car and drive off and have them put them out, you know, because, I mean, people are really doing this other places on this earth. And as a political tool, they can't condemn it. And then, you know, a hunger strike is a variation of that, a calm down version. And I mean,
still time to negotiate somehow.
Yes, because the negotiation has to come in at some point when that happens. I mean, there's not even any negotiation when you decide to pour gasoline down your throat and on your body and light yourself on fire. But when you're going on a hunger strike, someone's got to say, hey, what do you want? Or how far are you willing to go? Are you going to take this all? Is this issue that important that you're going to give your life for it? So, I mean, that's a decision he has to make. And that's a decision that the government and the authorities have to make. Are they going to let people die in their streets for this cause? And I call for hunger strikes, mass hunger strikes. How far are you willing to go for this cause? I mean, that's more important than occupying this whole city. That's, you know, more people. Yes, more people down here. Let's occupy America, like I say. But Yeah.
I can't
let's get some recognition.
I can't quite say how I feel about Hunger Strike. I know it's a powerful tool. Gandhi used it, and it does bring some extra legitimacy, as you say. However, it's in a way an act of violence against yourself.
Yeah, against yourself, yes, yes.
And so how can you recommend that? I don't know. It depends on where you're coming from.
No, I mean, I'm not recommending it for everyone, every citizen in the street. I'm not saying, no, we all come down here and stop eating. No. But how many people believe that much in this cause? And if you believe that much in this cause, there needs to be more people doing that. I'm not going to do it. I've done it. I've done it for lesser issues.
Yeah.
But I would come down here and jump on that
if
more people came down,
yeah.
you know? What and I know there's people out there, yeah. so.
What is the cause? Can you define it somehow for it? There's a lot of different people wanting a lot of different things.
That's a tough one. But this cause, regardless of what it's for, because I'm almost a nihilist. I don't care. I don't care about how much, who's got money. And I don't care about the money system. Fuck the money system this world runs on, all right? And all I want to say is that regardless of the issue, this issue I see is more important than the protests, the 60s, all the stuff. I mean, when the crash happened and people came and did this and occupied parks and things like this in different cities, in Washington, D.C., veterans after World War I, my relation, Douglas MacArthur, went through with tanks and bulldozed that stuff and shot people. American citizens that died and gave their life and were injured in the line of war and were getting nothing for that compensation-wise or health-wise afterwards. And that's one of the reasons why I don't like my relation and Douglas MacArthur for that. But there's other reasons, too. He was a good general, I guess, whatever. And I respect him. But, I mean, he's acted like an idiot at family reunions. So, I mean, there's things like that happened in 1930, and they just came through and bulldozed this over, this in 1930, that wasn't even this. And, I mean, the powers that be could do that. They could come down here right now with microwave transmitters on Humvees and
just cook
end
us.
This, end this in a second, all right? But they're not. And Portland is working, but they're using it for their own political gains authority, I think, certain people. But the fact that they're working, the fact that political science students from PSU that are claiming no affiliation, you know, that want to see change, they want to see community, that say community is important because, And I was talking about public education and all that and with this guy, and I said, well, I mean, yeah, that's fine if you want to publicly educate everyone with money, if that's how we're going to do it. But it comes down to the family first. The family needs to educate. I mean, if there were no political public schools as an institution, that's who would be doing the education. So it has to start there first.
What do you mean by family? Kind of the small nuclear family
or a larger nuclear family? Yes. So, because I know I could educate my kids if I had some. I don't know that I have any. But And the education system needs to totally change in this country because the way I see it, and I've educated myself better in 8 years in prison, 2.5 years at times in a single cell for 23 hours a day, reading books, working out, playing chess, and that's it, writing letters to my friends that hopefully haven't forgot about me in that time. And I see once I came out, I got my GED when I was 16. I went to PCC here, did that. Took a few terms, said, I'm too young. I'm not doing school. I got a full-time job. I worked at Pietro's Pizza from the time I was 16 till I was 20, till I committed a robbery. I just went, whatever, bonkers, got shot in the face by police.
Drugs or alcohol involved?
I drank some beer that day, but I wasn't high or anything like that when I went in there. I got a check for $500 in the mail, tax return. I quit my job that day full time, you know?
Yeah.
So there were other issues that we don't have time because there's too many backstory and stuff, you know? But I got shot in the face by Portland police when Croker was the chief, right? When he brought all those dirty cops up from L.A. and they ran up here and started shooting people like crazy.
Were you armed?
Yes, I was armed. I was armed, but I wasn't going to shoot the officer. I could have. He was a rookie named Chris Devlin, and I would have shot me, too. I would have shot me, too. But so The fact is, I got shot in the face. It was an eye-opening experience, almost an eye-losing experience, but I didn't die, and it's fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I would have shot me too. Yeah. But the fact that they're just shooting people willy-nilly, you know, resorting to that, and I know that's been an issue, especially the last 5 or 10 years, you know? It's been an issue. So, and I don't know, I looked it up on the internet. I'm like one of like 3, 4 or something that have been shot by the police around this area, not just Portland police, that have survived that, you know? So I'm a small demographic here,
yeah.
You know, and I could have easily died. Yeah. So
what do you see coming out of this that's going to make your life better personally? How's it going to get better for Jeremy?
I totally bettered myself in prison. All right. I made it work for me. Like I said, I had to put myself in a single cell for the solitude, because it was so disgusting, the prison system here in Oregon, right? I mean, I don't want to get into certain opinions, but there are just heinous child molesters and rapists just walking around online. And most prison systems, they segregate that because they're getting murdered on a daily basis if they put them in with some of these people because of the type of systems. And there's parts of Oregon prison systems that are doing something right in certain areas, but... So, I mean, that's one of the things. I had to put myself in a single cell because I couldn't. It was too distracting and just disgusting to me. And I mean, I wasn't out there to get those type of people or anything. I didn't care. I didn't want to know what you were in prison for. You know, if I'm playing shuffleboard with you, you know, and some kid comes up and says, "Hey, you know that old guy molested kids that you're playing shuffleboard with?" And I said, "Oh, really? This guy right here? Well, let's kick his ass right now, me and you, if it's that bad, right? If this guy needs some more punishment, all right, he's already in prison, all right? And maybe he's kicking it and paying rent and walking this main line, and that's disgusting, I agree. But you're not willing to do that. Oh, I was just letting you know in case you didn't want to play with him. Well, I didn't want to know that guy was a child molester. I wish you hadn't told me. And anyway, I'm done talking about that, but that's one of the reasons why I put myself in a single cell and educated myself 24 hours a day, physical exercise and mental exercise. And that's why I aced my history class and philosophy of religion, you know, and I took all these classes that I know. I write poetry, lyrics, I write stand-up comedy, comic books, you know, and I'm a writer, I'm a man of words. And I think that it was the best thing at the time, because I was doing drugs. I mean, I wasn't a hardcore drug addict. I did some pills. I smoked weed a lot. I was a stoner. But I was too crazy. I'm still too crazy. I have all this energy. I've been walking around Portland, going to the bar, Saratoga, my place, you know, by my house. And I'm just talking about issues, you know. And a lot of people that I just meet, you know, and they say, "Well, why do you always tell people that you've been in prison? Like it's something you have to tell people right off, you know, because it's off-putting, I think." But it's not to me. I don't see it as a social stigma, although society does. You know, people like Nietzsche thought that certain prisoners in a democratic were on the forefront of human evolution and adaptability. And I have mass respect for Nietzsche and some of his ideas because of that. Because I, in the eyes of society, I'm a criminal and a felon. And he had respect for people like us and saw what we were doing. You know, if we weren't hurting people, we were willing to break laws. And it was even worse because he was talking about gulags and camps under the czars, you know. And it was the same under the Soviets. It's just a perpetuation in that country. And And he said that about them. And so, I have respect for you, Nietzsche. You have respect for some of us, you know. And there are people I've met in Portland. I love Portland. I was born and raised. I was born on Morgan and Albina in my living room, natural birth. My mother had the last 3 of us in our living room because she didn't like the health system around here in Portland and what the doctors were doing to her, right? And she was a nurse in Vietnam. And not in Vietnam, but here in the Coast Guard. And she's gotten 2 types of cancer, but she's doing good. It's in remission and stuff. Yeah. But she doesn't let them dictate to her and tell her what. You know, she does all the internet looking up and all that, and she's got a history in medical field, so she knows what she's doing. She said, "You're not going to do that to me." You know, she didn't take the chemo. She took the radiation and just what she wanted, not what they said she needed.
Well, Jeremy, you know? I have a question for you. I broadcast for KBOO Prison Pipeline.
Oh, and all right. So I never really listened to KBOO a lot in there. I know KBOO is a great institution. I mean, it's awesome. I almost came and played some music, you know, 10 years before I went to prison. But
I have a question for you. I'm somewhat of a specialist in addiction and prison issues. So you're talking my language here.
All right, yeah.
And you're talking about what I'm very familiar with and what I know. And the question I have is your attitude isn't, I did this crime, I did this drug, and I did this crime, and now
I wasn't high when I did my crime. But
I shouldn't go to jail or prison or anything, but what do you think once you got in there? I mean, most prisoners I talk to, they say, yeah, I did the thing, so I needed to go in and do my time. But I didn't think that. It's very punitive in the prison system, as we know, which you just mentioned. So if you carry a gun, if you do drugs, I mean, we live in a society that has rules.
I wasn't high when I did my crime, but yeah, all right.
Well, but I mean, we have a society that if you, for whatever reason, be it needing more security or whatever, but for whatever reason, if you go into prison, you know, if you get yourself in prison because of, but once you're there, and you were touching on some of the problems there.
Yes.
We're in a very punitive system.
System, yeah, I know. I study quite a bit prison issues, and I volunteered at Partnership in Safety and Justice. I read their magazine all the time, Prison Legal News, and I know a lot of the people, David and some of the other people. And so... Yeah, they're doing things right because, a lot of people don't need to be locked up. I mean, and we're locking up the poor. We're locking up people because they're poor and they're needy and they're desperate, you know, and they have guns because it's America. So,
Well, there's an awful lot. There's a lot of misunderstanding around it all. And that's a lot of what we're doing on Prison Pipeline. So you might want
to
get on the web and go to Prison Pipeline and look at. We have about 5 broadcasters, and email them and say I'd be willing to come on to
talk,
the show and talk about some
of
these issues, because I've had people with these issues come on as well.
Yeah,
you know, and
I've heard it.
I've seen it
on NPR. I listen to NPR all the time. See, I didn't. KBOO wasn't. I did a lot of time at Snake River and stuff, and KBOO was only when I was at OSP. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know. I didn't know the platform and what you guys are doing, because I would have listened to that show.
Yeah. Well, it's been going on for quite some time with Ruth Kovac, and then she left because her sister got sick in Chicago, so she moved to Chicago.
Okay.
And she opened it up for all kinds of people. And I used to work in the juvenile justice system with gang-affected kids who are meth-addicted, 13 to 70-year-old boys that were at the end of their line. So I worked, and I did a lot of research, creative expression research with that. And I wrote a book called Needs, and it's on the Amazon.com web and all that.
Disgusting. Do not do methamphetamines, people.
Right. Yeah. So that's the point, you know. But we need prison reform. I had a guy by the name of Mark Arnold on not too long ago, and he was in different prison systems, Columbia and so on, and here in the Portland area, and he said he did do drugs and got involved with robbery and whatnot, and but he did 4 years with absolutely no reform whatsoever within, dodging all the gang stuff that's going on inside.
Yeah.
So I'd like to I think it's very important for the public to understand the stuff that's going on inside.
Oh yeah.
And why is there not rehabilitation and transformation tools and things that you can be doing?
I think rehabilitation is a nice platform and sometimes myth when the authorities try and use it, because there's not a lot of people that want reform because they're able to live similar lifestyles inside of prison. And not want change for themselves because maybe they're addicts or don't have that willpower, right?
Of course not. Of course not.
And
but there is a need for change.
Yes, there is a need for true rehabilitation and education. I would stress more than any kind of cognitive program. Across the board, real education, history.
So what do you propose people do? We're talking, you know, okay. Right now we're talking on web and we're live streaming here. But for the people that are listening, what do you want the people out there that don't know anything about this or very little about this? What do you want them to know about what is part of the solution to, you know, you were in and you came out. Well, you're in good shape now.
Sort of
good shape now. And you learned a lot.
Yeah, I learned
what could be tweaked that would make it better for everybody involved, including the public and that wants you in there if you do stuff. And then once you're in there, so it's all about you and the public and it's everybody. What do we do?
I would say mandatory education and reading. I would force these inmates to read extensively and say... They force you to do other things, like, I mean, maybe take a shower and act orderly, and they have all these rules, right?
Well, I understand. I understand that the educational component has actually been removed from these systems.
Yes, and I can tell you a lot about that
because
I wanted some of that,
that's an issue.
Yeah. So.
What do you say about that? That's a whole issue unto itself.
I can talk about that. But let me quickly say, I mean, if you're talking mandatory education, you're saying you inmates, you read these books. You don't even have to say it's a rule. You say if you read these books, you get more time on the yard. You get privileges. You know, positive reinforcement if you do. You know. All right, so let's talk about education specifically here in Oregon. And it's on a, you got to be on good behavior.
Yes.
If you don't act good, it doesn't matter what your potential is, right? Because I could have probably had a PhD, but I didn't have any good time. And all the crap that was going on, the gangs, everybody thinks they're tough. And I've been fighting from the time I'm a little kid. I don't like to resort to physical violence, but I'm capable and I'm willing. And if you assault me, I will fight. So
you were raised around gang violence, gangs.
Well, yeah, I grew up in North Portland. I went to Jefferson High School. And Jefferson High School was harder when I went there than any prison in Oregon.
Yes, it's notorious.
I'm not kidding. When I went there in 96.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you got to be pretty tough to be at Jefferson.
All right, yeah, and I was white. So there was like 67-something percent black and like more Mexicans than even whites, you know? And I grew up in the neighborhood. I have black friends and friends of all races, you know. But I've experienced just crazy stuff going through where I lived, and it's a lot nicer in North Portland.
And what I'd like to do is address, since we're all touched on this, we live in a system that's created these prejudice issues and all these issues where people get segregated and they start fighting
one another. Very segregated in Portland. I think authorities perpetuate that, the people that run the prison, because they play off that in order to control, right?
Yeah, they do, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's, so, I mean, I don't have an issue with the segregation itself, but as a tool for the authorities to perpetuate something like that. And racism and prejudice has been perpetuated from the time of the Pilgrims, because you had white slaves and you had black slaves, you had indentured servants. It wasn't the same thing. But the people that were running those, they perpetuated that these people were lesser than you. So the little guys would fight amongst each other.
Well, what I'd like to do is ask you, what does this, what you're talking about, what is this, why are you here at Occupy Portland, and what has this got to do with what you're here for? I mean, let's connect it with, because we're live streaming from Occupy Portland.
Yeah,
right
I talked
now.
About a little before with Meyer, and I came down here the first night, the 8th or whatever, Thursday, and I said my piece. I have my sign, Gross National Happiness, right? What they have in Bhutan. And I said my exercise your rights. I came down here and I marched and I exercised my rights. And I said, exercise your rights. Because you don't, they will excise them from you.
Yes.
And they will take your rights.
It's a lot of what was happening. Yes,
right. So I did that.
Yeah.
And
that's what KBOO... I mean, this is the beauty of, I've been broadcasting a little time now for KBOO, but this is exactly what KBOO is about. And by the way, we're in fundraising right now, and people need to support KBOO because we are a free
voice. Yeah, everybody with more money than me support KBOO.
We're doing exactly what you're talking about. We're exercising our right to speak freely on very important issues.
Absolutely.
That affect us all. And we're looking for ways to tweak those changes. So
Yeah. And we, like I say, I don't know if you were listening, but there was a political science major from PSU that came down, and he comes down every few days.
Yeah.
And I already told the story, so I won't go in again. But
people
like that down here.
Right.
And I this is the first time I spent time down here because it's sketchy. There's police officers. I'm on federal parole.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And there's people, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a lot of people. And when you get a lot of people, you get situations. Like when I sat down in the seat, there was an issue with some free T-shirts behind me, you know.
Right.
And security had to be called. All right.
Right.
And I don't think they came over because the guy left. But I was like, I'm glad that they didn't come over here. You know, because if they take my ID, if I'm on the periphery, I have to report that.
Oh, yeah, you have to be.
And then I have to explain that.
You have to be very careful.
So I have to be careful what situations I put myself in.
Right.
So that's, and with not
this many people
and the unruliness that could possibly happen down here with not as many people. I mean,
well, that's been addressed over and over since.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't been keeping tabs on what I just walk by when I go check in at my federal place, and I walk through here and I just see it. You know, I catch the vibes, but I didn't. I saw this guy when I was on my way out. I wasn't going to stop again, but he was writing, and I said, "This is another man of words." And I said, "What are you writing, bro? What are you writing?" And he said, "Well, I'm going on the internet and I'm looking at this situation all around America and maybe the world." And he said, "I'm just recording what's happening here.
Uh-huh,
you know? I'm just feeling the vibes and what's going on and the cycles and the ups and downs of this protest here."
Right.
And one of the issues I said, especially in the PSU science, political science major, agreed with me, was it needed to be what it was on the 8th with that many people occupying Portland, not just this park.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would be down here every day if they were, you know, but I walked through and this is the first time I spent time. So,
well, I'm glad you came
I think
down.
You mentioned that these tents were going to come down, and that's maybe true.
Well, eventually, I can't
imagine staying out forever because they'll fall apart, right?
Well, realistically, we have to be realistic. Activist since I was 16 years old, and I'm 70.
Right.
So I've been an activist all my life.
Yeah.
And as I had said,
so you've
over
seen
and
over, a few movements.
Oh yeah. And
but
see,
you've
that's
seen
the
that
point.
This movement is
Well, let me talk about this. Movements burst forth like this one.
Yeah.
Good people like yourself who come out. We support them.
Yeah.
In spite of our Life 101 difficulties.
Yeah.
And then they fade. They die. Because when the tents do come down, which I'm hoping they don't ever, but the point is they will.
Absolutely.
And when that happens, that's when the rubber hits the road, if you will, and we have to stay connected. We have to stay united.
Yes, yes.
In all of our arenas, you come.
Don't let it die. Don't let it die.
No,
it's going to take different avenues. It's going to manifest itself differently. Once these do, if they do come down, that's true.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be there.
Well, it's got to be the tense or representation of what's in the heart right now.
Yes,
so,
manifestation.
So you're a very young man,
of our energy.
And from what I can see, you're a very young man, and so to keep that passion alive. Oh, you're old
Not
enough to be my grandson.
Oh,
so
yeah. See,
my daughter's 49.
I was younger or older.
My daughter's 49. So,
yeah.
So you're old enough to be my grandson. So see, the deal is, you. Keep that passion alive and keep connected to tweaking those changes for anything you're passionate about, and stay on the straight and narrow because you have to, because you've got a PO, right?
Yep. And I've already peed dirty, and they gave me a break. Now I have to take a class. I'm not even smoking a bit of a joint anymore.
You want to be careful. You want to be careful.
Yeah. So I'm celebrated because I got on this federal gun case, sentenced to time served. Judge Haggerty went above and beyond.
He's tough.
Now listen, these circumstances in my gun case are like nothing. It wasn't stolen. It was registered in my brother's name. I was set up to be in the car while it was returned to him. And I did good on my pretrial, and I got 3 A's and 2 B's. And he went above and beyond what I expected.
Good.
I expected at least a year in federal prison.
He
went out of his way to say, okay, you don't deserve this. I see that you're making this step, right?
Yeah.
So if I do mess up,
he's going to have
You have to stay that way, sweetie, because you can't be of any effective help. You're an expert on prison reform because you have been in there and out.
Yes.
I've never been to prison.
I don't claim to be, but I know quite a bit,
But I have worked in the prison system, and I have worked with young people who are at the end of the rope, and I see what society is capable of doing to
I've seen quite a few suicides. I've actually saw someone die when I was on this 120 days in county jails in MCDC. I don't remember his name.
Anybody with a briefcase,
on the fourth floor.
Come. We want to hear from you.
So I saw this guy die on the fourth floor. He hung himself, and he was a opiate user addict. And I don't know if he was just trying to get his issue of his whatever they give him. So because he was miserable, he was only on the unit for 2 days.
Well, that's the problem, you know. We have so anyway. I need to. I need to make an announcement here, but I really appreciate Jeremy.
Yes, thank you for letting me say my piece.
Thank you for coming out. Jeremy Reno from
Jeremy Christian.
Jeremy Christian. I just saw Reno here, so somebody by the name of Reno.
Yeah, it's another guy.
Okay.
Only my first name.
So I really want to appreciate, I appreciate you coming out.
Absolutely. I'd like to get that information.
Yeah.
Go to
the KBOO website. It's
all right.
KBOO.kbo.fm.
I'll find it. I just thought you had some papers or something.
Yeah, right there. There's stuff right there. And go to Prison Pipeline and see, and we'll have you on the air at some point.
I'd love to do it again.
Rock on.
Yes, I love rock and roll.
Behave your little self.
Plan to do that.
Good. Bye, Jeremy. Woo. So do we press this? Do I press that?
There's a lot of sounds out there on the street at Occupy Portland, and KBOO.fm is picking up the sounds, the vibrations, the energy of this event and this space, and we're bringing it to you only with the membership support of KBOO.fm 90.7. We are a nonprofit. We are listener-powered, and we are one of the voices in this ongoing occupation. We are here for your voice, so if you're between 3rd and 4th and somewhere near Madison, down by the Justice Center, we're in the block just north of Terry Shrunk Plaza. They're calling this Freedom Park. There's a big elk statue in the road here, a number of tents, and a lot of great people engaged in dialogue, openness, awareness, consciousness raising, community building. And KBOO is part of that. 90.7 FM, we're glad to bring you this voice from Occupy Portland. We're volunteer-powered, volunteer-run. We have a great staff that supports us. We have ongoing education at KBOO. And only with your support every year does KBOO bring you live podcast streaming coverage from Occupy Portland. So we're glad to be able to engage the community in Occupy Portland. I'm going to bring up some sounds just from the street in front of us. We've got great people on their way to dinner. Veterans for Peace and Iraq Veterans Against the War are assembling. Coming up here, they are demonstrating against Condoleezza Rice. I believe that march is taking place right now. She is speaking nearby. So if you're down in the downtown Portland area and you want to participate in that demonstration against Condoleezza Rice, that's happening right now. Iraq Veterans Against the War and Vets for Peace. So come get engaged. Be a part of the movement, of the occupation, of the awareness and the expanding consciousness around the disproportional distribution of wealth, resources, and power in this country and all around the world, because we are the revolution. So That was exciting. I think there was a button push that shouldn't have been pushed, and I want to apologize.
Hello.
Oh, my goodness.
Are you seeing? This is a mic check.
Oh, well, that other button says solo.
Check.
So if you want to fly solo, I push that button, and things get really loud. So my apologies to the burst eardrums that just experienced that.
Yeah, we just had a wonderful district attorney that stopped by. He didn't want to necessarily be on the air, but he appreciates this movement.
Yeah.
He appreciates this movement, and we're really appreciating folks like that with the suits. The suits are coming by and going, we appreciate you.
Absolutely.
This is good.
Yeah, we are together in this struggle, the ongoing struggle for awareness, for inclusiveness, for openness and transparency, and you're part of it. The listening community, the KBOO supporters, the Occupy consciousness.
Yes.
This is definitely, as some people in the mainstream media have identified it, it's a moment, and here we are.
And
we have a couple of guests who are going to join us, so I'm going to turn over my headset over here. There's two of you. Do you want to both be on and be hosted? Please, take the mic.
Hello. What is your name?
Yeah.
Mara. So you're here at Occupy Portland.
I am indeed.
What are your thoughts?
About the whole thing, uh-huh. I am totally excited. I think, I love that I was just telling Deborah the sign.
And this is Deborah?
Yes.
Yes, Deborah's to my right and Myra's to my left.
There was a sign that said, we're here, we're unclear. Get used to it.
Yes.
And I love the openness, the joining of the conversation, the no directness, because it's got to unfold in its own way.
Yes.
And I just am so excited
about that
happening around the world.
Yes.
People are getting a chance to see a whole other way of doing things.
Yes.
And that's totally exciting to
me. Well, I was 16 in 1960, so you know what we were doing.
Right.
I've been an activist since I was 16, and I'm 70 today.
Right.
So the deal is, we've been at this before, and we've seen movements come and go, and here's yet another wonderful movement. And yes, when I first rolled through here, I live downtown, so this is, in fact, my backyard. And I when I was downtown, I rolled through here expecting a little bit more chaos, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And there is some, of course, but boy, this is cool. This is wonderful. There's a sanity here. There's a saneness, a sanity, a purpose. The undertow here is organized, intelligent urgency,
mm-hmm.
with the understanding that we need to keep this going after the tents are down. Right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, it's the beginning of something. I hope. We don't know.
Or the extension of what we already tried many, many times in the past.
I don't know. I think it has a different quality. I think it's the sign that said it's a... I would even say it's not a revolution, it's an evolution. that I hope we're going to a whole other level of consciousness, of awareness, of interconnection, interbeing, in a heartfelt way rather than a mental way. And so that people have a sense of compassion and empathy with other people that is not a should, it just arises out of the heart. Yes. And that's the energy that could take us to another evolutionary consciousness.
What do you think?
Well, I've been struggling with a lot of despair for years over the situation of the world and what appears to be the sorry state of us human beings in terms of getting along with each other.
Yes.
And I'm daring to hope in a way that I haven't allowed myself for a very long time. It'll be a small miracle if in the next 3 minutes I don't weep with joy and feeling, because I have so many feelings. I come down here. I am self-employed and I am working, and this is a busy time for me. And but I've come down when I can to contribute and to inspire myself. I heard a story of, I'm probably going to mangle it terribly, but of the people making parades in the street, and eventually the leaders not wanting to be left behind, getting in front of the parade.
Yes, isn't that amazing?
So this is what I'm holding out hope for, that the parade in the streets, the camping in the parks is starting, and for some of our leaders to know they're not going to be out in front with no one behind them, but they better get out in front or they're going to be left behind.
Yes.
And I just am putting as much energy into that image as I can. We're all relatively in the same decade here, and we kind of botched it up, like every generation before, and it's amazing to, I feel like almost like been given another chance, and yet of course it's, I also feel more and more that it's, I have to struggle to feel that this is my world sometimes.
Exactly. Where did the sanity and dignity go?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where's the sanity and where's the dignity?
Right.
We go back to sleep. You know, we form movements and we come together and we form committees and we get busy and we try to make changes for us and our children and future generations. And then when the tents go down, then we go back to sleep and the many Babylons keep falling.
Yes.
I wrote a whole piece about this. And so what do you think then? So you think maybe, what do you suggest people do that don't want to, how do we not go back to sleep? How do we not go back to sleep?
Well, I think it remains to the people who are desperate, and the young are desperate. And I'm getting in the parade behind them.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
They're our leaders now.
Yes.
I mean, we still want, you know, be lovely if Obama could step out in front there.
Yes.
I heard DeFazio on the news the other night, and he was great, you know.
Yeah.
He was out there, you know, with the parade. But we need... So what do we do? We give as much as we can. We give till it hurts, really.
And I think
we have time and energy.
Yes.
And one of the things is that it's so weird to have this echo.
Yeah.
that the unfolding of it, and that this is the 99% and not the 1% that is so inclusive there's a real possibility that something will unfold that is so meaningful to people that they will be behind it. Mm-hmm. And I also want to say that I don't think that we've necessarily failed. You go as far as you can, then you maybe do go back to sleep, and then, but when you wake up, maybe you're a little bit farther along.
Yes.
So I think we're in a process, and the fact is that evolution can happen very quickly, and we may be at the beginning of something that's going to spike and really move, and we don't know that, but
well,
it's possible.
I get this feeling. See, I know that peace is not only possible, it's inevitable. We have no place else to go. We're at the bottom. We're bottomed out. My arena is working with addictive situations or addiction, especially in the prison system, because I broadcast for KBO and Prison Pipeline. Mm-hmm. So I'm working with that arena, but there's a wonderful book by Ann Wilson Sharif that actually addresses and predicts Occupy Portland and Occupy United States. And she said that she wrote a book in the 80s called When Society Becomes an Addict. Mm-hmm. And when society becomes an addict, she makes it very clear that corporate America is like any good addict, self-centered, selfish, egocentric, me, 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 I want it all, and I want control of everything, power, 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 control, control, control. And we've had that over and over and over.
So we're making it an intervention.
Yeah, and any movement is an intervention to that. And it's like we had already addressed, I've been here since about 1 o'clock today, but it's just like this big, bulky ship. Every movement moves that ship at least another inch. But maybe we'll get it away from its mooring this time. We have to get it away from its mooring. I don't think we have much of an option, because the world herself, you know, Mother Earth herself, you know, is kind of tired of the whole, you know, climate change. We've really messed up here. I mean, and we don't, and it's not like we got together and woke up when we were kids and said, well, we're just going to get into movements, and we're going to do the best we can, and we're going to have our kids and our families, and we're going to do, and then we'll go back to sleep, and then there'll be environmental disaster. No, we didn't. None of that got planned. But because we are in the illusion that the powers that be are really the power, you know,
we
apathy is a disease unto itself. What do you think?
I haven't been so focused on the apathy, so that's more your shtick.
No, I'm not either, but, you know, I've witnessed that
in especially.
You know, as I'm my age, and we're, as was
Deborah
mentioned,
said,
we're basically the same age group,
yeah.
I believe we're probably the choir, but we have sat and watched our peers go to sleep.
That's right.
And get back into the grind, the trudging the road of destiny, and that therein then lies the problem. I've never gone to sleep. I know better. I have been an activist all my life, and I'm going to stay that way till the day I die. But because there is a reason for that, because we've got to keep pushing on the ship. We've got to keep pushing on the ship.
Well, I wonder if we're going to have a different ship, or, you know, with the, if it's going to be so different. That's what I hope.
Yes, and this is what was suggested earlier by one of our broadcasters, that just get off the ship. We just empty the ship, and it'll be lighter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and we've had so many wonderful guests that have showed up and talked about all the different levels of the reason we are still at war. We've never not been at war. My parents were born into World War, or my grandparents, World War I. World War II, my parents, all the different wars since I've been a kid to the present time, and then this horrible 9/11, and then we have this particular war now. It's not a time, this country's never at a time been not at war. The day it was formed, it was at war with something or somebody, the American Indian movement, the black movement, so on, so on, so on. We've always, so we're taught war, we're taught. So you're at war. You become complacent, maybe, huh? Question? Complacent? So, and it's almost like we have no, where's the power? How do we keep the power, if you want to use the power word? But where do we, so what do you suggest we do to stay awake and which we're doing. But what do you suggest out there to people that are listening to this? This is live stream now and we're on the web. What do we say? How do we not go back to sleep? How do we make this? How do we move the ship away from the mooring and get it out into the deep water where we can be free?
Well, I'm a Buddhist.
As
a Buddhist practitioner and teacher, I think it's about opening the heart. I think it's about opening the heart, and as Thich Nhat Hanh says, about interbeing. Yeah. And when we recognize that on a deep, deep level, the way we relate has to be different.
Yes.
So I'm not very comfortable in the material world. I've always been an activist.
Yes.
And I'm with you on that.
Yes.
And so I do what I can, but I think the real activation happens in here, in the heart.
Yes.
And I think this community is based on a heart.
Yes, it
That's what's so exciting.
All the vibes
to me
here are fabulous.
So that's the energy that does it.
Yes.
So I think it's shifting consciousness, and then the material stuff will follow.
Yes.
It may be an idealistic idea, but that's how I think about it and approach it. So a lot of my activism is clearing up my own heart.
Well, we need idealism.
Yeah.
And so, are you also Buddhist?
I am.
So we had another fellow here. I don't have his name in front of me right now, but he was also practicing Buddhist, and he suggested that without, of course, we know without that love base, without that open heart and that love, we can't be actualized human beings. And then you can't give away something you don't have, right?
Right.
So. We know that the world needs to be in, it's not idealistic, it is, we're spiritual beings having a human experience, right?
Well, I don't know that I'd put it that way, but when you ask about what people could do, mm-hmm. I think people can look in their own hearts and think, what is the highest thing I could do in this situation,
yes.
whatever the situation is?
Yes.
And see if you can act from that.
And what about the value of suffering? He brought up the value of suffering. People are scared to death to suffer.
Well, they do.
And so you do. You're bored to die. You know, and we're going to suffer. And so he was talking about using this. Don't be afraid of suffering. And I know this is quite the Buddhist. There's a Buddha. I'm not a Buddhist, but I am a Buddhist, if you know what I mean. I'm all religions. And then I'm none. You know, so. But people from my arena, I work with addiction and prison systems and police and all these people. And I see a tremendous amount of suffering on a daily basis. So suffering, though, is a good thing.
I don't know if it's good
or bad.
Because
you're going to do it anyway. You're going to do it anyway.
It just is. But what Deborah was saying is that it's the suffering people that are leading this movement. They're like, this is not good enough. I don't have a future.
Exactly.
That's suffering.
Exactly.
And so that is what this has come out of.
So that is driving us towards this peace and unity and brotherhood.
I think it always drives us to wake up.
Yes. Yes, wake up, world. We're losing our children.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anything more you guys would like to say?
I'm done.
It's terrific
shaking
that you're here
head.
And that this is here. I
Isn't
mean,
that
it's
wonderful?
Totally.
It is totally.
I know.
Totally
we're in the middle of our fun drive right now. And this is one of the free voices in the community, KBOO. The powers that be, needless to say, want to shut us down. They do everything they can to shut us down. I'll just be frank about that. And so we're in our fund drive or fundraising. So go to www.kboo.fm and contribute if you want to keep the voice of KBOO alive with these very important issues. Because without funds, this wonderful radio station will die.
This voice,
and it'll be one less, not only KBOO voices, but the movement within KBOO. So go check it out, and encourage your friends to do some contributing, because we're We're on the edge. Yeah, we're on the edge.
Well, I don't come from Portland. I'm from Ashland, and so
you can still contribute.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
Do you guys get cable over there?
We don't get cable, but that's what I wanted to say. When I come to Portland, my friends often tell me about what's going on cable, and
yes.
I've had friends who's worked here, so.
Yes.
It's a terrific thing.
And we're archived on the web, so you can go to the web and get the archived programs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of important stuff going on here, and I feel very fortunate to sit here as a broadcaster.
It's great. Yeah.
Giving everybody a voice. Well, peace be unto you, guys.
Yeah.
Is that what you say? Is it namaste, or is that
namaste.
Another one?
Namaste. Say that.
What does that mean exactly?
It means it's actually not Buddhist, it's Indian. But it means the divine or the best or the love in me honors the love or the divine in you.
The love in me sees the love in you.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, each one teach one. Take that out there. Spread it around.
That's
right. What we need. Each one teach one.
Yeah.
The love in me sees the love in you. And isn't that what it's all about? What else is there?
Yeah.
Is there anything else? No, not really. So let's go for it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming and being a part of our broadcast. Thank you so much.